Welcome to Tabletop Tommies. I'm Johnny.
And I'm Phil.
And today we're talking about prepping for a tournament you've got coming up. Whether this is your first tournament or your millionth tournament. Hopefully, you'll find this interesting, regardless of which of that end of the spectrum you're at. And if not interesting, at least useful.
Fair enough.
So, Phil, you're going to a tournament. What's the first thing you're thinking about or doing?
Understanding what sort of event it is that I'm going to.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by this is it a thematic narrative event? Is it a casual one-day, three-game local gaming store event? Is it a full-on two-day competitive, no-holds-barred, gloves-are-off event? Because how you prepare for any of those and what you bring in terms of your army and all that sort of stuff will very much depend on what kind of thing you're going to.
Yeah, 100%. I suppose everything that we discuss from this point on depends on that first question, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What's the best way to work out what type of event it is then?
Read the pack.
Pro tip.
read the pack, read the description, because hopefully the TOs will make it really clear in both their event description, yeah, particularly if it's on Facebook, for example, but also their pack, what it is that they expect and what you're getting into when you sign up for the event. And even as simple as, is it called an event? Is it called a tournament? Is it called a gaming day?
Yeah, to be honest, I'd flip your advice even sometimes. When I'm looking at tournaments, quite often I'll read the pack before I even sign up to the tournament.
Sure.
Because especially if you're going to multiple tournaments in a year, if this is going to be your sixth 1,000-point single platoon, two flamethrowers in 6 weeks,
yeah,
it's hard to be enthusiastic for that. But if it's a novel format, I'll often go to stuff, even when I'm probably a little bit busier than I should be, if it's something interesting that I've not mm-hmm. been to before.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, for me, reading the packs probably before I even buy my ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Remembering the pack, now that's a different question.
Yeah. Reading the pack, buying the ticket, and then forgetting about it because it's so far in advance, that is a separate thing altogether, yeah.
Yeah. One thing I would add here as well is print the pack.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, if you're really far out, printing the pack might be a waste of time and money because it might change.
Yeah.
But I would definitely turn up at your tournament with a pack in hand because a lot of TOs do provide the pack in a printed copy, but many don't, especially the smaller tournaments. And mm-hmm. if there's anything quirky going on, the last thing you want is like trying to load it on your phone. You've got no signal. Or what were the victory conditions again? Oh, I don't know.
Yeah. But yeah, read the pack, understand the pack, understand the event. Because if it's, if it's a nice little casual narrative game, you don't want to turn up with your, you know, gloves off, Gurkha Power Stewart spam list. And everybody else has you know, gone for really, really thematic, you know, nine dice, super, you know, maxed out, 10 man squads, LMGs, SMG on the NCO, because you're going to, well, you might feel a little bit out of place, or you might feel like, you know, you've maybe turned up at the wrong party with the wrong clothes on.
Yeah, I mean, not only that, just from a sort of logistics perspective, if you haven't read the pack and you're going to choose your army and you're submitting something that is illegal by the pack, you're just creating work for everyone involved in that situation. The TO's going to have to bounce it.
Yep.
You're then going to have to rewrite it. If you are really enthusiastic about it, this might make you a little bit annoyed and now you're having to think, what am I going to bring instead?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, step one, read the pack.
Yeah. Once you know what the pack is and you know what you're getting yourself into, obviously you're then going to start thinking about what army you're going to take.
Yeah. So when you're choosing armies for events, obviously you're choosing it based on what type of tournament or event it is, but do you tend to lean more into sort of your comfy armies that you play a lot, or are you one of those people who regularly builds a new army for a tournament?
So when I first started, it would have been going to events to play different people and experience different play styles and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I would therefore take an army that I was getting used to and getting comfortable with. Because if I was chopping and changing every single event and I'd only been playing for 6, 7, 8 months, you know, I'm not going to understand and learn what my playstyle is. So when I first started going to events, it was very much my British, it was my commandos, that was what I was playing, you know, for the first sort of 2, 3, 4 events. Now, I absolutely am that second type of person, like you said, where I'll look at what's coming up over the next 12 months. I'll, you know, got a good understanding now of what kind of events appear in the UK. And I'll plan an army 6 months ahead which I'm going to take to that particular tournament. So, you know, one of our first episodes when we had Mark Vance on talking about the Welsh Open, I knew way in advance that I was going to take that Free French North Africa Army, bought it, you know, months in advance, and kind of worked out how long it was going to take for me to paint it and all that sort of stuff, knowing that, you know, for September 23, that was when I was going to be taking that list to its first proper tournament, proper event.
Yeah. See, I've never been one way or another, especially. I like to build new armies for tournaments because really, it's the only time I have a real incentive or drive to finish an army. Mm-hmm. Usually what happens is that I buy an army, I get quite excited about it, I start painting it, life gets in the way, it goes on the shelf, it's sufficiently painted that I'm not embarrassed to take it down the club. And then I move on to the next project when life stops being busy.
Yeah, yeah. There's nothing like, you know, the week before an event to really get your painting mojo going when you haven't already got your army sorted. Yeah.
Exactly. So that's why I do like events for that. If I want to start a new army, finding a tournament that I think that army will work well for, like the Welsh Open, is a brilliant idea for me personally to give me motivation to paint. Mm. However, if as I say, life is quite busy and I haven't got time to sort of plan out a new army, get it all painted, and maybe the tournament is a bit of a quirky one where we're not playing the standard missions and it's going to be, and there's a lot to think about, mm-hmm. where
yeah, yeah.
if I'm thinking about a brand new army and I'm having to prep for brand new scenarios and gameplay, then that's when I tend to fall back on sort of the old favorites. Like my American army, I've been playing since I started Bolt Action, basically. So whenever it's either sort of like a big tournament that I know is going to be a lot of thinking, I'll often fall back on those ones, like my Americans or my Finns or my Germans, if it's a friendly.
Yeah. And I think if you're first, you know, starting out, if it's your first event or your first, you know, your sort of second, third, fourth event, there is a temptation sometimes to, you know, net listing is not a thing in Bolt Action. You know, we don't see net listing in the way that you might see it in other games, but you do see and you do hear, you know, we all know what the top competitive or top efficient, you know, points cost efficient units are. If you are going to lean into that, play it first. You know, there's nothing worse than bringing, you know, a really strong, you know, I say I play Brits, a really strong British army full of, you know, Gurkha Powerers and Dacre Stuarts. But if you actually haven't played and haven't got used to that play style, you can rock up at an event. People will look at your list and go, oh, okay. But then if you can't actually handle it and you can't, you know, play it well, there's a bit of a mismatch there between, you know, the list that you've brought and the ability to actually play that list and do it successfully.
Yeah. I actually think there's a mindset there because actually I do the opposite where sometimes if I want to get into a new army and I don't have time to practice it, I will take it to a tournament completely unprepared because there's no other time I'm going to get that many games in that quickly.
Yeah.
And so if I'm going to a tournament, I don't really mind where I place. As long as I'm not sort of embarrassing myself, as I'm somewhere in the middle, I don't mind learning. So I did that with the Brits, not last English Nationals, the one before, at BritCon. I took Brits to that, having never really taken them to a competitive tournament. And I even took like quirky units like the Wasp, knowing full well that it's not a super competitive unit. It's a really hard one to work out how to play. But I'd built this Wasp. I very rarely got to use it. And I thought, I'm not that bothered about like top position. As long as I come sort of in the top half of the table, I'm a happy chappy. And so, yeah, so I took this fairly standard British platoon with like Paragurkha. So I knew that I wasn't hugely up against it. But at the same time, I knew it was going to be an uphill battle because I hadn't played the list a lot. And I had like quirky units in there alongside the good ones.
Yeah. And I think I agree with that. When you have been to a few events and you've kind of got used to going to tournaments, they are really good to try new things out at as well.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't do that from day one. I wouldn't turn up to my first event with a brand new list I've never played, having watched videos on YouTube and listened to podcasts and gone, oh, these are the really good units. I'm going to take all of these units to an event and then not practice it beforehand.
Yeah. And that's exactly it. Because again, I'm talking from a perspective of sort of knowing the rules well at that point. And so when I'm making decisions with that army, it's purely based on the units. It's not trying to remember rules that I've only just learned. And again, it's sort of accepting, it's the mindset of accepting, I'm probably not going to do the right thing here. So I'm just going to do something that I think will be interesting and learning from that. And sort of, so your first game might be terrible. Your second game should be less terrible.
Yeah, yeah.
And then by your last game, you should be pretty good with that army.
Yeah. And if it's a 2-day event, your day two is going to go a lot better than day one, hopefully.
Incredible. You'll be unstoppable by game six.
Yeah.
So I've read the pack.
Yeah.
Off the back of that, I've chosen my army.
Mm-hmm. I've submitted my army.
Yes. That's the key thing in the pack, actually. When you print it off, highlight the submission date. You don't want to be submitting late. Bane of everyone's existence if you do.
Submit it in good time. And if you're not sure, email the TO beforehand and ask. Particularly, you know, if it's a generic platoon event, for example, and you're not sure what does and doesn't count for a generic platoon. Yeah, if you take Easy Army, for example, Easy Army is a fantastic tool, but it's not the be-all and end-all. And there are units listed under generic options, which are not generic, for example. And the same is true of, you know, other army list builders that are available. So, yeah, if you're unsure, get your list in early, ask a question. TOs would much rather, you know, answer the question in advance than receive a list on deadline day, which they've then got to bounce because for whatever reason it's got units that are not appropriate to the pack or aren't generic or what have you.
Yeah, I was going to talk about how to submit your army, actually, and you've hit the nail on the head there. I actually think Easy Army is, it reminds me of that quote about democracy where it's something like, it's the least worst form of governance we've found so far.
Yeah.
That's what Easy Army's like. It's terrible, but it's the least terrible one that I've found so far.
It's not terrible, but for most things, it's pretty good. Where it falls short or where there are gaps is when wording in previous campaign books has maybe been a little bit ambiguous or, you know, because it's one bloke doing it in his spare time, it's not his job, it's not supported by Warlord and so on. He might miss things and people take it as gospel.
Well, I think you're kinder to Easy Army than you should be. So I used to use, back in the day, I used to use Battlescribe for
40k.
And that interface, so this has turned into a whole other episode, so I won't dwell too long on it, but this is something that comes up quite a lot with new players on like Reddit or Facebook, like how what app to use. Battlescribe I always found to be a much better interface because you can do really simple stuff like just copy and paste units and stuff, which if you're taking those five squads of Paragurkas, copy and paste much quicker than having to click in and now press save.
Yeah.
And it's also, I just always found it more intuitive like that. I liked the way it laid stuff out, but there was never a repository for Bolt Action that was anywhere near up to date. And so Easy Army is the one that I use, and I do find it really quite slow and arduous to use. And its layout isn't exactly what I want, but of all the different ones I've tried, Easy Army is, as you say, it's the most accurate one, even though it's still got some inaccuracies. And it's acceptably laid out in a way that, I mean, its big strength, like a lot of products really, is that it's so ubiquitous that people understand it.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's the big strength for it, I think.
Yeah.
I think let's get back on the track. So I've chosen my army. What do I think about next?
So if the pack talks about the missions, so some packs will confirm the missions before deadline day. What other tournaments and events might do is after deadline day, then tell you what missions you're going to play. If they are available beforehand, I would go through my list and go through the missions and have a think about what I would do for each mission with regards to first wave, reserves, and that sort of thing, because it will speed things up on the day.
100%.
So if I know that one of these missions forces me to reserve, you know, a minimum of 50% of my force, I don't want to stand there at the table, game three, while my opponent's waiting, and I'm going, well, how many units have I got? How many have I got to put in reserve? Which ones am I going to put in reserve? All that kind of thing. So I would definitely think about the missions on my list beforehand, prior to the event. Obviously, what you do is going to depend on the table and all that kind of stuff when you get there, but you can do a certain amount of legwork beforehand.
Yeah, and actually, there's two things I'm thinking there, which is actually, if the missions are pre-published, I'm going to be thinking about them during the army building phase.
Yes.
So if none of the missions are objective holding, then I know that actually the infantry squads aren't as important.
Yeah.
And equally vice versa, if every mission is objectives, if I bring no infantry, I'm in trouble. And so if they are published in the pack, this step actually could come before you sort of building an army step. If they're not published, I totally agree with that, what you're saying about thinking about your reserves and stuff. You're thinking, how is my army going to play objectives, kill points, movement, and really you should have a battle strategy for each of the sort of the standard rulebook missions. So if I'm doing double envelopment, am I going to deploy my entire force? Or as you say, am I going to do some reserves, and what is going to reserve? And is that plan to sort of, am I reserving in order to counter, or am I reserving in order to rush? Like those are the kind of things that you don't want to be making 4 o'clock on a Saturday, two or three games in, and you're exhausted, your feet are tired, You've never seen this army before. You don't really know your opponent. They're equally tired. And you're thinking, oh, I just don't know what to do.
Yeah, yeah.
And then equally, if you make a battle plan before it happens, you can always blame past you for any mission failures, can't you? It wasn't your fault that the idiot who told you how to play the mission.
That was last week's Johnny, not this week. Yeah, not today's Johnny.
This week I would have got you.
Yeah.
The one thing I would say to be wary of, actually, is timely objectives and missions of that kind sometimes have very quirky capture rules. So, like, timely in the original format, as Jeff from the Snafu podcast wrote it, you couldn't capture those objectives with two-man teams. Yeah. So if that's your usual strategy for key positions, those sort of, like, fine print details you need to be noticing before you get to the tournament.
We had that at World Open War where you had to have, you know, for one of the missions, a minimum of a three-man team to hold an objective. And that did change some people's list building because whereas previously, you know, you might take a single officer on his own, you suddenly you might start thinking, do I want a three-man HQ team or do I need to have a spare weapons team which has got three men in it rather than only two, which I can use to hold that objective. So, yeah.
Intel officer.
Yep, intel officer. Yep.
That's the time for him, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
There was one of the missions as well where they added kill points to an objectives one that usually didn't have it, I think.
Yeah, there was, yeah. Yeah, which just shifted the way you played that game. Yeah, yeah, that mission.
Yeah, and if you've rocked up the table and only noticed at the start of the mission, that's a lot of thinking to squeeze in sort of a minute or two, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brilliant. We've talked quite a lot about sort of prepping your army and sort of like...
Mm-hmm.
planning for the actual games, but we haven't really talked about what we're taking to the tournament outside our army, have we?
Yep, so it's the night before, we're getting everything ready, we're super excited. Obviously bring your army.
Mm-hmm.
Goes to stand to reason. But it's all that kind of gaming paraphernalia. So things like, if you've got them, two sets of different coloured order dice.
100%.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not saying, you know, brand new players don't rush out and buy a second set straight away, but if you've got two sets of coloured order dice, bring different colours in case you have that clash with that opponent who's only got one set, for example.
Yeah. As you say, as you get more experienced, if it's your first tournament, I wouldn't worry too much about your second set of order dice. But once you get a few in, you should definitely have a second set because if you're facing the new player, it's always sort of like good for the community if the experienced players can accommodate the new players rather than it having to go the other way around.
Yeah, definitely, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Make sure you've got plenty of dice. Make sure you've got your pin markers, whatever the pin markers look like, your blast templates, your tape measure, maybe a spare tape measure, your dice bag, all that kind of stuff. Top tip.
Yes.
Bring a tray. So even, you know, even if it's a one day event, if you're moving from table to table, what you don't want to do is to arrive at the start of the day, get your army out, put all your miniatures on the table, end of game one, you pack your army away, move it to the second table, unpack it and so on. So bring a tray. I'm not necessarily saying you need to go to service stations on the way and steal them from the restaurants or the cafes, but get a tray, always useful.
Yeah. Bacon tray is always good, especially if you're using magnetic bases.
Yeah.
We'll stick straight to it. If you're trying to make a sort of a scenic base, IKEA do a lot of sort of dining trays that usually have slight recess. So if you really want to go fancy, you could put some foam in that and like build it up into a nice hilly. I've seen a brilliant one with like a hilly, with like a hillside with sort of caves in and for a Japanese force.
Okay. Yeah.
And so actually that's another thing. If you're really keen on, if you're building this new army and it's for thematic reasons and you really want to sort of lean into your history, building a display tray for it not only sort of is a really nice hobby thing, you can take it to the tournament. It'll probably help you win Best Painted.
Yep.
and it'll help you carry your army around.
Yeah, and people will notice it and they'll come and talk to you about it. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you'll get loads of people. If you do a tray like that, you'll get loads of people taking photos of it and stuff and like asking you how you did it. And it's a really nice way if you don't know anyone in the community. Things like that are a really nice sort of like conversation opener where people will come up to you and say, wow, where'd you get that tuft of grass from? Mm-hmm. That stuff there looks really natural. My stuff looks rubbish. And then you can go into a whole conversation. You might make a friend.
So the last thing to do before you jump in the car in the morning, all fresh-eyed and bushy-tailed, print your lists, two copies.
Minimum. I always bring one list for myself and one list for every opponent I'm going to face.
Okay.
And then that way, if the opponent keeps it by mistake, I know I've always got spares. Yeah, yeah. And the other thing as well is, if I don't lose them, I end up using them to keep notes on, either like score if it's timely or write down my outflanks on.
Yeah. Bring a pen.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, bring your lists and print them and get and you know, give them to your opponent, because it's you know, good etiquette to A, to talk through your list, obviously, at the start of the game with your opponent, but B, if they've got a physical copy, they can refer to it during the course of the game rather than having to ask you. And we've talked about this in a previous episode.
Yeah.
You don't want a situation where I'm asking my opponent, what does that unit do? Because it's potentially giving away what I'm thinking about doing next, or indicating to them that I'm concerned about a particular element that unit might have. So do print your lists out.
And not only that, it's also a speed thing. Like, these rounds might be quite short. You can do 1,000 in 2 hours sometimes at tournaments.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's very tight. If you're wasting sort of like 10 minutes over the course of the 2 hours just asking people, how many SMGs does that squad have again? That's just a waste of time that you don't need. Because if you had the piece of paper, you could be checking that while your opponent actually moves them.
Yeah, yeah.
And I have had opponents who you'll be setting up and you'll go give them the list. And oh, I trust you. And I always just say, no, keep my list. Because you never know, later in the game, you might want to check something. And sure enough, later on in the game, there'll be something like, how strong is the bazooka again? Or something trivial like that, that really everyone knows, but you just want to quickly double check. And you can just do that without having to spend too long on it.
Yeah. And the last thing in terms of packing your gaming paraphernalia, bring the books.
Yeah, 100%.
If you're using units from a campaign book, you know, I absolutely would recommend you buy the book rather than just going off Easy Army or another army builder, and you take them with you on the day, because going back to the conversation about Easy Army, it doesn't always present the unit rules accurately. It often misses things out. Likewise with the theatre selectors, it doesn't always present the actual rules of the theatre selectors. And, you know, speaking from a TO perspective, when I've gone back to people and said, yeah, you can't take that unit, or over the course of you know, the games at an event as a TO, I've had to explain to people during the middle of the event, oh, you've been playing that unit wrong, because you haven't brought the book and you haven't read the book, and you need to know what your army does and you need to know what your units do.
Yeah. And it's also a lot of these theatre units especially are quite quirky in their rules, and the wording is important. And so it's one thing to sort of say, oh yeah, it does this, but you might have misread it. It's just so much better just to have the book to hand. You can always double check it. Your opponent can double check it. I also think from sort of a, so I have a lot of armies already. I haven't bought a lot of bolt action recently, to be honest. And I don't buy a lot of bolt action because really the infantry are that plentiful and cheap that when I buy a pack of infantry, like one pack's like a new army for me, basically. A lot of my tanks are print. And so a lot of the time, I'm not, even though I play bolt action quite a lot, I don't actually support Warlord financially that much, really, I would say. Other than what I always do, so whenever I'm running a new unit, I'll always buy the book.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a nice thing to have as well, just on your shelf, if even if I haven't played an army for a while, just having it on the shelf, and then I might read it for the history at some point. So there's my little piece of goodwill at Christmas time to Warlord. So that's everything I need to think about then, Phil, isn't it? I'm ready to go.
Yeah, I'm ready to go. Jump in the car, jump on the public transport. Off we go to the venue.
Brilliant.
Make sure you know where it is.
Yeah. On that note.
Make sure you know how you're getting there. Maybe check out the parking in advance. Sounds, you know, straightforward, but is there food available? Bring, you know, bring food and drinks with you, all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it is a long day. Three games is a lot to play, especially if you're not used to playing it in one day. You know, you are going to get tired. You are going to get hot. You are going to get, you know, sweaty and all that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah. Bring some deodorant as well, actually, on that note. But yeah, all the kind of stuff. Know where you're going, know where you need to park. Do you need to bring food with you? Is there going to be food available? All that kind of thing. There's nothing worse than turning up, you know, to an event late because it's further than you thought, or there's no parking available. They don't serve any food. You haven't brought any food with you. Halfway through the day, you're absolutely starving and you know, already tired and exhausted, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the food things are right faff, where if there's like one food van and there's loads of tournaments happening simultaneously and there's 45 minutes for lunch, the queue's half an hour long.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't get in the queue quick enough, now I'm not getting lunch. And so yeah, it's such a sort of quite a boring thing to think about, but but just thinking, am I gonna take sandwiches? Is quite important. And yeah, sort of staying hydrated, staying fueled. I mean, with you saying there, three games, if it's 2.5 hour games and then you've got the breaks in, it's like a full day at work, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a long, long day. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And actually, on that note, make sure you sit down when you can.
Mm-hmm.
If your opponent's doing stuff that's taking them like minutes at a time, sit down in that time if you're not needed, because it doesn't seem like much sitting down for 2 minutes at a time. But the other alternative is to stay on your feet for 8 hours.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that even people who are sort of like in sort of like quite physical jobs, I think just because the thing that's different as well when you're playing bolt action is you're not moving around a lot on your feet. And so it is very tiring standing almost stationary for a full day. And also that weird lean where you're not fully leaning over, but the table's not quite high enough, so you're in a weird sort of like, depending on how tall you are, obviously.
Yeah.
But I find that personally, that the tables are low enough that I can't stand up straight when I'm doing stuff on the table, but equally I'm not really crouched over either, so I'm in this weird position where it can really wreck my back if I spend the whole day on my feet leaning half over the table. It's just turning into complaints. Yeah, maybe we shouldn't go, actually. Now
I'm thinking about this. We'll do that at the end. Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you know what? It sounds like far too much hard work. We're just going to stay at home and play in our garage.
Yeah. What's the point again, Phil? Why am I going to a tournament? We actually didn't address that at all, why we're going to a tournament.
Oh, we'll gloss over that.
Yeah. Anything else we need to consider now that we're actually en route or at the tournament?
Just in terms of at the tournament timings. Make sure you know what the timings are. Obviously, the TO is going to keep you informed, but nothing worse than turning up late for, you know, the second or third game because you haven't paid attention to what the timings are. You spent too long, you know, on the break. It's frustrating for your opponent, and it's, you know, frustrating for the TO as well.
Yeah, one of the things that I always do at tournaments, which I don't like doing, but It's that one of those things where you sort of like you endure it now and then in the future it's easier, where at the end of a game when you're quite tired, you've been playing for 2.5 hours, let's say, maybe it's even longer, and your stuff's all over the table, I'll always try to pack away immediately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even though like you might be keen to go and get something to eat or go and talk to someone, I always try to pack away as quick as possible, because then if either I don't know the timings or the TO has changed the timings for some reason, I'm never caught off guard because, oh crap, I've got 5 minutes left for break, but that's fine because all I need to do is pick up the tray now.
Yeah, yeah, no, I'd agree, definitely, yeah.
But it is, even when I play down the club and stuff, the only bit of the game that I don't enjoy is having to pack away at the end. I feel like we need to get some caddies who just, when your models die, they just neatly put them back in the case for you or on the tray.
Very good. And then during the course of the day, enjoy it. I know from what we've said so far, it sounds like they're not very enjoyable because there's a huge amount of preparation and your back's knackered and you're on your feet all day. But enjoy it. Talk to people. You know, I went to events pretty early on in my, you know, starting to play bolt action. And I got to meet loads of different people. I got to play loads of different armies. And I got to know people, you know, on the UK, you know, event scene. It was fantastic. And these are people that I now see regularly, at, you know, at events. Because I've you know, been chatting away with them for the last, you know, 18 months now, nearly 2 years.
Yeah. It's incredible how they're sort of in the UK circuit, as it were. There's a group of people who all sort of know each other just from... And they might not be going to every single tournament, but if you go to sort of three big ones across the year, you'll probably meet the same people at those three.
Yeah.
Like the same dozen people, let's say. And so by the end of the third one, you usually know someone who next year,
yeah, yeah,
when you see them again, it's like, oh, this time I'll beat you.
Yeah.
No, go on. Oh, well, all I was going to say is with you saying, like, it seems like a lot of work, make sure you enjoy it. I actually think if you did none of the steps we did and just rocked up, there's such a good spirit in bolt action that you would get through it.
Yes.
Like people would accommodate you. They'll understand if you're a brand new beginner, they'd understand. And you'd probably still have a reasonably fun time. And really all of this is less about sort of make sure you do this, otherwise everyone's going to hate you. It's more like do this so that you don't have to think about it on the day.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you can actually maximize the fun you're having because all you have to think about is playing the three games you've got.
Yeah, and a lot, you know, certainly most of what I've spoken about is because I haven't done that at some point. So yeah. I've turned up to an event and I haven't printed my army, for example,
yeah,
or, you know, I didn't check whether or not there was any food available, or I forgot, you know, the second set of order dice, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The other thing I was going to say as well about talking to people is walk, you know, depending on when your game finishes, but certainly over the breaks, walk around, have a look at what people are bringing in terms of their armies, have a look for some interesting things. And we talked about this on a previous episode. Some of my army choices have been influenced by what I've seen at other events or what I've played against at other events, and I've gone away and gone, I'd never really thought about playing that nation, but actually I really enjoyed the game I had against, you know, that particular nation. I want to go look at it more and maybe lean into to building that army next.
Yeah, and one of the things actually when you talk about order dice and bring multiple colors, if you don't have order dice yet, one of the things I would recommend is picking a color that's less popular.
Yes.
Because if you use a color that, so everyone, well, not everyone, but the khaki and the green ones are very popular, and the brown is popular as well because it matches sort of the British uniform brown. Mm-hmm. If you're using those dice, you'll definitely need a second set, because the first time you play a Brit or an American, they'll probably have green, khaki or brown dice.
Grey as well for Germans. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. The sand ones are popular as well for the desert forces.
Yeah, yeah.
And the red ones are popular for the Soviets. For the Soviets, obviously. Yeah, yeah. And so, really, I'd be looking at sort of like the maroon or mm-hmm. like the light blue,
yep.
white and black. They're the ones that I see the least often. So I always use black dice just, and I can't remember why I started using the black dice, because originally they were just my spare set.
Mm-hmm.
And I started using them. They don't match my army in any way. But I don't remember the last time I came up against someone using black dice.
Mm. If you want to go crazy, you can get the even more different colours from the Gates of Antares range.
Yeah, you have to be careful with them, though, because some of them have, like, arrowheads on instead of the straight lines, which I don't think you're going to notice it in the order bag. But it is one of those things if you start to go to very competitive tournaments where
I imagine
someone would be a little bit suspicious if your order dice are different because it's embossed. If you're really going for it, you could probably feel it in the bag.
Yeah, true.
You probably couldn't quickly, but... and I'm pretty sure, I think that happened once, where one player did exactly that just because they liked the colour of the Antares ones.
Mm.
And I remember they actually brought a normal set of order dice as well.
Sure.
Just in case their opponent did want them to use the normal dice instead.
Cool.
And then, of course, you could always use a different set in the bag if like you really like your bright orange Antares dice next to your units. You could put your normal order dice in the bag.
Yeah, absolutely, Yeah, have a different set in the bag.
I never really like doing that because I think it increases your risk of sort of duplication errors.
Mm-hmm.
Where, say you do a snap two, you activate your three units with your Antares dice, and you forgot to pull
the
extra snaps out of the bag.
Yeah.
Or like something dies and you forget to pull the dice out because you took the dead dice off the table.
Yeah,
that kind of stuff. Yeah, getting into the weeds. Move past it. Right, so job done. End of episode?
Job done, end of episode, yeah. We finished the event. You know, we've got some good results. We've spoken to some people, had a great time. We jump back in the car or jump on public transport and we go home and we don't think about it ever again.
Perfect.
Yeah. However,
what you could do
is spend a bit of time thinking about how the event went, how your list went. Talk to your opponents after each game. Ask them for any feedback. What went well? What would they have done differently?
I'm a little bit more on the fence on that one.
Okay.
Because the problem is everyone has their own mindset.
Yeah, sure.
And so like it's useful feedback, definitely, but I'd never take something someone said and immediately just do it to my army, because if they're sort of like a close quarters Paragurka player and I'm trying to build the perfect gunline army, their advice is going to be, oh, you should definitely add a close quarters unit to discourage people from charging you. Well, probably not.
And that kind of links with what I was saying earlier about, you know, you can watch YouTube videos, you can listen to people on the internet and go on Facebook and so on, and you can build a list based on what people tell you is good. But if it doesn't suit your play style and doesn't suit what you're comfortable with, you're not going to do well at it. So I absolutely would talk to my opponent after a game and you know, get some feedback from them. I'd also think about the list at the end of the day, and if I'm driving home, have a think about how it's gone. And I might consider changing elements of it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be drastic necessarily and change every single unit, but still keep the same nation, because there's an argument then for playing a different nation altogether. it's all about, you know, making those changes with a few, you know, a few minor changes for the next one. Or if you like you were saying, Johnny, if you've tried a new list out or you've tried a new nation out at an event, you may decide, actually, yeah, that's gone really well. I want to lean into that for the next few and kind of embrace playing this nation for the next, you know, 2, 3, 4 events. But yeah, I wouldn't just leave it at the end of game three and go, job done, thank you, off we go.
Yeah, I do always enjoy the car drive home, thinking about, oh, what could I do next? Either in terms of sort of like optimizing this army, if I'm trying something really quirky, like a horde army. Oh, okay, so it lacked in this area. How do I sort of keep the spirit of this Horde army, but also give it a bit of bite in this area.
Yeah.
Because I just find list building quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I do enjoy thinking about is, if I am thinking about a brand new force, I'll be thinking about those forces I've seen, as you said earlier.
Mm.
What have I seen? And I always try to build an army around an idea, like I've just said there, sort of like, what's the most high explosive I can fit in a force?
Yeah.
And I'll be thinking about the forces that I have seen and sort of, oh, should I start a new army to try this out? Or can I do it with an army I already have? And I think that's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
On the note of driving, actually, one of the things we didn't recommend on the way to the tournament, but is one of the things I do, is I will often listen to a podcast about Bolt Action on the way to a Bolt Action tournament.
Yeah.
Especially the episodes that people do. So like the Snafu is what I used to always listen to on the way to stuff.
Yeah.
And if it is, say, like a new campaign book where I'm expecting to see a lot of units from that campaign book, listening to their episode on it is useful. Or if you've got a Bolt Action podcast that sort of talks about missions,
mm-hmm.
that's always really useful, because even if you think their advice is rubbish, just refamiliarizing yourself with all the missions in case a quirky one comes up.
Yeah.
I always find quite useful.
Yeah, see, I do the opposite. I deliberately don't do anything Bolt Action related before the event.
Really?
I'll listen to music. Yeah, I'll listen to music, or I'll listen to another different podcast altogether, because I don't want to be living and breathing it the entire day. I want to just get in the zone in my own way. Turn up at the event and off we go.
That's funny, because I always think, I sort of segment it the other way, where I think once I'm traveling there, like that's when my day of gaming begins. I have a lot of this time of my life to play games. And then once that ends, we'll put it on the back burner. And so often I'll be listening to music on the way home. But I find, because also sometimes as well, if I haven't been down the club recently and I haven't been playing really often, that's the other big benefit of putting a podcast on the way to a tournament, because it just sort of reminds you, when we used to get frequent FAQs, those episodes were always really useful, because in discussing the FAQ, usually you end up discussing like rules nuances that you would otherwise forget about.
Yeah.
And that's always really useful if you haven't played for a few weeks or like a few months even.
I remember those days.
Yeah. Back in the good old days.
Back in the good old days when you had regular frequent FAQs. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Getting nostalgic. All right, boomer. Well, Phil, I think I'm ready for my first tournament now.
Fantastic. So I think if you're a recent convert to Bolt Action, maybe you've haven't been to any events before, or you've been to one or two, they are absolutely fantastic at getting a lot of games in a short space of time, getting to play different players, so it's not just the people that you're playing regularly at home or down the club. You also get to experience, hopefully, some different armies and different builds and all that kind of stuff. So I absolutely do recommend going to events. The community's a nice bunch of people. You know, I can count on, you know, probably one hand the number of bad games I've had at an event or a tournament. And I genuinely mean that rather than just saying that for the sake of it.
Yeah, I agree on that bad game assessment. It's very rare, to the point where it's incredibly noteworthy. Like, if I didn't enjoy a game, it's sort of a standalone event of the year where I'm like,
Yeah.
Oh, I can't believe that happened kind of thing. Yeah, and you touched on something that I was thinking there, which is that even if you're a really seasoned veteran at Bolt Action, but you only ever play down the club, what I find, when I used to only play down the club, what I found is you fall into a groove where you're always sort of playing the same opponents with the same armies. And even if you've got like a lot of opponents so that you're not always playing the same person, it's always the sort of same sort of style of game. It's very rarely a surprise. And I really enjoy in games when something is surprising, catches you off guard. And so that's what I really like about tournaments. Someone will have built an army in a way you just were not expecting it.
Yeah.
Even if it's really not effective, and that's why no one ever builds an army that way, it's at the very least, and it's almost like playing a brand new game.
When
I built my Brandenburgers army with the nuns, all the Germans in disguise as nuns and policemen and stuff, that's one of the things that I found with that. It was like playing a completely different game. And everyone I played, that was sort of their opinion on it. It was like, I don't know what to do, because I can't stand back and shoot you in the way I normally would, and I can't do that. And it just was a little bit more interesting. And that's the sort of quirky stuff you get to experience when you go to lots of tournaments.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
Well, hopefully that was both interesting and useful, as promised. As ever, thank you for listening. Please do leave us a review if you're enjoying the podcast.
Please like, share, and subscribe.
And it's ta-ta for now from me.
And it's ta-ta for now from him.